back to shattering this. The thing that Yahweh wants most, and Yahweh happens to be God's one and only name, is for us to choose his guidance over religion, instead of religion. He wants us to learn from him as opposed to be indoctrinated by our fellow man. And so, to that end, Yahweh has inspired prophets like Dode, whom name has been changed to David, to share insights, perspectives that help us know who Yahweh is, understand what he is offering, and that provide indications, glimpses, as what life will be like with him throughout eternity as part of his family. Hello, Kirk. Good to have you back.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. I spent a fair amount of time trying to translate the 23rd Psalm. In fact, I have 2 days in it, and I'm only through five statements, mainly because some of the words which are categorized as, by our lexicons as translations, there really doesn't seem to be a lot of justification for those translations, and the word usage by Yahweh is different than, it's certainly more expressive than the translations alone would indicate. So this is, and what I'm finding here, and we had a call at the end of the program yesterday, Kirk, saying that, shouldn't it have been a obvious, although enlightening, maybe even exhilarating, to know that a psalm which is presented, this is the most famous of all psalms. I don't think there's anything in the Torah, prophets, and psalms other than man's truncated corruption of what they call the Ten Commandments. I don't think there's anything in the Torah, prophets, and psalms that is better known than the 23rd Psalm.
Mm-hmm.
Most people can cite it.
Oh, yeah. Yes, everybody memorizes that one. That's the Sunday memory.
Yeah. So with it being that famous, and it seems to be just so simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
Dode is relating himself to a sheep in Yahweh's, and in this case, the translation's in the Lord's flock. And it presents the Lord as his shepherd. So, Christians have this stupid picture of Jesus in white linens with his shepherd staff amongst sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that's what it's portraying.
Mm-hmm.
But Noah isn't talking about sheep. Never equates himself to a sheep.
Yeah.
And he ain't talking about green and growing grass, is he?
No.
No, in fact, this has really nothing to do with sheep at all, does it?
No, they're all metaphors to begin with. I mean, but I liked where you went with it. I mean, we all know eternity is eternity and forever is forever, and there's a path to life that leads to eternity. And that's what he's talking about, and he's giving you a glimpse at that. And I think that's almost, and since we've been talking, or you in particular have been talking with Roy, more and more and more about eternity, and that's also enhanced this as well in the discussion of the whole thing.
Yeah. It's helped us recognize what he's really talking about.
Right, because a lot more depth than we did before, I think.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, is there any time where Dode's life was considered tranquil?
Not really.
No.
From one thing to another.
When he was a shepherd, he was dissatisfied as a shepherd. He really thought that he ought to be involved as a leader within Yisrael. He had demonstrated his qualifications to serve as a leader of Yisrael. And yet he and the king, Shaul, were at odds with one another.
Mm-hmm.
The king that man chose, that God says, I don't think that's a good idea. In fact, I think it's a really bad idea. But, I gave you free will. If that's what you want, you can have it. And that king, Shaul, questioned him, and Dodd didn't get along. As a matter of fact, for a lot of his life, Dodd was being hunted by Shaul, and at times Dodd had to seek refuge amongst Israel's enemies.
Biggest enemies, yeah.
Yeah. And even when Dodd finally came to power, his life was not tranquil because he sought the company of hundreds of women. I think there's a reference that Larry sent me the other day that says he had some 700 wives and another 300 or so concubines.
I thought that was Solomon.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. That's what I thought was Solomon. Yeah, and we don't really know how many Dodd had, but it was a lot.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether it's Dodd or Solomon, Dodd had a harem.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, I have one wife. I love my wife. Mm-hmm. But there is no... There's never a day that goes by that's all 100% tranquil.
No.
In a relationship, in a long relationship with a wife. And I've been, it's my only wife. As my wife says, I married my trophy wife.
That's right.
So I wouldn't have to go off and have a midlife crisis. But, you know, I can't imagine having two. And we know Dodd had at least two.
Yeah. What?
Or more.
Jacob had three, and they were all sisters.
Right. Yeah, can you imagine how tranquil that would be? There is no indication that Dodd was ever tranquil.
No.
He was off fighting enemies, defending Israel, trying to stave off being killed. So him to say that, you know, Yahweh makes me lie down and by still waters and takes me to pastures. And, oh, it's just so lovely.
No,
he's not talking about that at all, is he?
No, he had to fight his son, for goodness sake. His son tried to overthrow him.
Yeah. So, what he's talking about is getting out of that mess, of leaving the mess of men, the politics of men, the religion of men, the animosity of men, the viciousness of men, the deceit of men. What he's really talking about here is getting away from all of that. And to eternity with Yahweh. And what that's going to be like. It says, and if you put it in context, it's obvious that that's what he's talking about. Because he's speaking of this as if it's a fait accompli, as if this is something that he knows is his to claim.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he never claimed it on earth.
All right.
So he's talking about where he's going with Yahweh, where Yahweh's going to take him.
Then you conclude that Deshaul was to live tranquilly and securely, and that's nothing in common with him.
All right. So what he has here is Yahweh as a observing shepherd in eternity.
All right.
So the role of a shepherd in eternity. Now, we've got a really big pasture in eternity.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were exposed to the entire universe, wouldn't you want somebody to shepherd you through it so that you, A, went to the most interesting places, B, didn't get hurt along the way, and C, if you did something that was dangerous, you got somebody to rescue you?
Yeah, I could get on that bus.
Yeah. You know, this idea of going off and exploring the universe alone does not appeal to me.
Could be scary.
Yeah, and lonely. But to be shepherded through the universe, that appeals to me.
Mm-hmm.
And Ra'ah, the word that was used to depict shepherd, as Rosh Ain Hay, which has an eye right in the middle of it, speaks of all of the benefits of having a shepherd. Someone to look after you, someone to protect you, someone to nurse you back to health, someone to lead you, someone to care for you.
That's right.
Based upon the verb ra'ah, which is to see, which is rosh aleph hey, to view things from the proper perspective. to understand as a result of closely examining and carefully considering what's around you.
Mm-hmm.
So with this shepherd is going to expose us to the universe so we can closely examine it and carefully consider it. He's going to witness the universe right along with us because this is a witnessing shepherd, an observant shepherd.
You know, this perspective, I went through two or three more lexicons last night, and they just never get past the top surface.
No.
It's really amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing that they don't make the connection between Ra'ah and Ra'ah, as obvious as that is. That they don't think of what is it about a shepherd that causes the shepherd to be effective. The shepherd is observant.
Mm-hmm.
Pays attention to the sheep, pays attention to the sheep's surroundings.
And we know is Yahweh feeding his flock, and he's always feeding us with words.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so in eternity is all speaks to it. I mean, this is overwhelmingly that way. So, I mean,
right.
I'm not saying that I could get past to where you were, but, I mean, it's after you pointed out, it's, you know, then I go look up the words again, and I'm going, wow, you know, that's absolutely correct.
Yeah. I mean, in this particular case, it tells me something, it affirms something, that I think I realized the first time just recently. I don't know if it was a conversation between you and I or you and Roy. I think it was you and I, where I recognized, and I've said this many times, that sharing something that you witness that is wonderful makes that event much more special. You see a beautiful waterfall, a beautiful rainbow, a sunrise, a sunset, a beautiful animal in its natural setting. You just a beautiful panorama. When you're looking at those kind of things and you're alone and you have no one to share it with, it's okay. Not bad, it's okay. But when you have someone to share it with and to talk about and to celebrate how beautiful it is with you, how interesting it is, then it is vastly better. So I viewed that one of the reasons there'll be a number of us with different personas and perspectives and personalities in eternity is we then have someone to share all of these grand discoveries that we're going to witness together with. But it never dawned on me.
Yeah.
Guess who's also going? Because he too
live in a complicated society.
Yeah.
So what we're learning here is that Yahweh could well have created us for the same reason that we seek out a mate.
Mm-hmm.
That men seek women, women seek men to spend their lives with. Because then you have someone to celebrate life with, to grow with, to share with, to develop a history together with. And that as you go through life, all the things that you experience to share. And so Yahweh may well have created us for the express reason that he created this magnificent universe and it just wasn't fulfilling without someone to share it with.
I think that's a reasonable assumption.
So as we go out and explore the universe, guess who's tagging along?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
To say the least. I like Roy's mechanical his analysis of that discussion, too, when he was talking about the, you know, that Yahweh doesn't want to know ahead of time, so he's going to be in the journey with us exploring these things and seeing a lot of stuff for the first time, because why not?
Right. Yeah, just because you can...
Doesn't mean you will.
View the future because you're energy-based, you're light-based, doesn't mean you have to view the future.
No. Now, I thought about that last couple of days, and I was thinking because I read the email from Roy, and kind of triggered my mind. And I've thought to myself, you know, that's a lot about the way I paint, like to paint. I have the ability to pretty well plan this thing and mechanically construct the painting and come out exactly the way I want it to come out. I can envision it and do it. The But the most fun you get in this is you slap it out there and you start working with it and let's see where it goes, you know, and then adjust as you incur more problems. You do this and I'm going to resolve it doing this thing and this thing. And that's a lot of fun, and it's fun to see how it actually comes out, much I think like an author does when they have a character and then they develop the character in their mind. And next thing you know, the character is almost telling them, no, I have to react to that this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, So the same thing in the art field, I think that's part of the joy. If we had it all pre-planned ahead of time, it's just like copying yourself over and over again, you know, where as opposed
exactly.
to it's fun to see where it's going to come out.
It's fun to see where it's going to come out. You know, I've gone on a lot of backpack trips when I was younger with my boys. And the fun was getting up over that next ridge, mm-hmm. going around that next corner, seen where the trail was going to lead. I didn't want to know what we were going to see around every bend beforehand. I couldn't wait to get above that ridge to the next bend to see what was there.
Mm-hmm.
And so Yahweh is going to do the same thing. We were conceived so that we could go on this trip with him. Mm-hmm. He wants to take us along. And he's going to shepherd us through life, through dimensions, through time, through matter, so that we can explore together, share together, see together, reason together, think together, imagine together.
And
this entire psalm is about that.
Yes, it changed the entire perspective I had on it.
Yeah. And what's interesting, too, is we're going to go through the verbs used in this psalm that suggest resting. And it creates this, in English, this perspective of apathy, or just, you know, lounging around. It's kind of like the Islamic paradise. You have these big, comfy sofas. You got all these slaves that are feeding you grapes and wine. And you know, you just lounge around. But that's not what the verbs written actually say.
Yeah.
The verbs actually speak of after having exerted oneself, after having reached out, after having gone on a grand and long journey, after being extraordinarily energetic and doing a lot of stuff, coming back home and resting and reflecting on based upon what has been done, what you've seen.
And doesn't it give a deeper meaning for the Shabbat?
Absolutely. That's what it struck me, is that there is a pace to eternity.
Mm-hmm.
And the pace to eternity is going to be the same 6+1 formula that the Shabbat, the oath of 7, was based upon.
Yeah.
It's the same as Yah's creation. He was out there, he was engaged, he was doing major stuff for 6 days, and then he took a day to rest and to ponder what he had done. So even if we go out in groups and we explore and we imagine and we push the threshold of the universe and of life and of dimensions, we're all going to come back home every sixth day.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about it. We're going to celebrate it. We're going to share it. We're going to contemplate what it means, what it could be. It's the pace of eternity. Then Chronicles, says that Dode had 7 wives, which I can tell you, having 2 is there is no tranquility when there is more than 1. That he had 7. It doesn't say how many concubines he had in his harem beyond that. And I guess it's Solomon that may have had the 700. It's interesting, the repeat of the number 7 in all of this.
Uh-huh.
By the way, you know that based upon the estimate of the number of galaxies in the solar system, that and based upon the estimate of the number of souls that will be born into the covenant, we're all going to have somewhere around 70,000 solar systems. Excuse me, 70,000 galaxies, each with an average of about 100 billion, and they think maybe it's closer to 70 billion, solar systems. So 70 billion solar systems in each of 70,000 galaxies.
Well, Yoshi said there's a house for everybody. So, wow.
Well, you're going to have some room to spread out if each of us inherits 70,000 galaxies like our Milky Way. Each with an average of 70 billion stars.
I'm a little worried. I have a hard time picking up my room. What am I going to do with galaxies?
Big, a lot of rooms.
We're going to have a lot of room to spread out. If you didn't, you know, if you were kind of said, okay, you know, this, I don't like overcrowding. I want some elbow room.
Yeah.
Some Lieberstrom, to use the old Nazi term. We need a little elbow room here. You'll have it.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's what's being discussed here. It is about our ability and eternity to go off and explore with Yahweh leading the way, being a witnessing shepherd so that he is as observant, if not more observant, than even we will be, and that every seventh day, we will gather together to reflect on what we have seen. Now, what Scott mentioned in the break is that while it's going to be a 6+1 pace, and while we're going to gather together every seventh day to share what we have seen, while you're out during those 6 days, you can make those 6 days last as long or be as short as you want. Because as an energy-based entity,
time is relative.
Time can flow at whatever rate you want it to flow or not at all. So each of those 6 days could seem like an eternity, or each of those 6 days could go by in the blink of an eye. You may enjoy the encounter meetings more than the discovery, and therefore you're going to have the 6 days go by in the blink of an eye, and you may just want to be a major contributor to it, and you get so into which you can imagine and conceive and what you're seeing, that you just want to prolong it and to enjoy it for a very long period of time. And you can, and we can still all get together on the same schedule.
You know, it's quite remarkable if you can get your head out of the restrictions of time that we're stuck in. But your brain can get out of that. I mean, we have dreams and things where we are all over the place. So, I mean, it's quite amazing when you start thinking along these lines. I mean,
And Dod imagined, was given a vision, just like Abraham, when he says, I don't get it. What am I inheriting? And Yahweh took him to the stars and to the spiritual realm and said, this is it. And he said, okay, now I get it.
But he said, this is your inheritance, and your inheritance is that perpetual thing. You know, he's talking about, there's no way to view that as anything but the heavens and the stars and the universes to travel and see. I mean,
well, since Yahweh had told us that that's what he did for Abraham, and then once he did it, Abraham got it after Abraham said, what am I inheriting? Yeah. You know, I'm going to say it's pretty rock solid that what we're inheriting is the spiritual realm and the abode of the stars. We're inheriting the universe, and that we are ourselves going to become like light, which is like Yahweh, in eternity.
So now when I see something like Nahal, which I think you covered yesterday, and you have a nun and a symbol of Yahweh and a person, and then it starts out with a nun, which I think in terms of inheritance, I don't think of just children, producing children. Now you look at it as an inheritance spent with the two of us.
Yes.
You know, so now that not to get
born into a family with an inheritance, but you know the. I'm going to expand, because of these letters, a little bit of what I think the Aleph stands for.
Okay.
The Aleph is one of the two letters that is always used in reference to Yahweh's title. The Aleph is it's Aleph Bet, the first two letters of the Hebrew alphabet, with the ram's head being accompanied by a picture of a home that is father. And it's Aleph Lamed, which is the ram's head, followed by a shepherd's staff for leadership, that is the Hebrew word for God. All right? So Yahweh only has two titles.
Father and God.
Mm-hmm.
And they have one common denominator. The ALF.
Mm-hmm.
So would it seem reasonable, therefore, to provide an extended definition of ALF as the mighty shepherd?
No, it would be perfect fit.
But we're talking about God as shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
Our Father, our Heavenly Father, God as our shepherd. When we use Ab and El, and when we realize that the common denominator in the two is the Aleph.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of this word Na'ah, which is in an abode, so we're speaking of a residence, a habitation, a home.
Yeah.
Na'ah, which is the Hebrew word, is an inheritance from God Almighty, the shepherd and father, for those who engage in his covenant, who stand up, reach up, and pay attention to him.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be Nun?
No, I said
Aleph.
That's what my note says right here. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I drew the same conclusion. It's also, you know, it's interesting. It was also, I found one place where besides a place of beauty and comfort, it was also a place to roam.
Mm. So exactly the same concept here.
Uh-huh.
To roam.
Yeah.
To extend oneself. You know, I was, the thing that took me so long to translate this is the dash A and dash N.
Uh-huh.
In the second, you know, the first sentence, it says, this is the song of Dode. Yahweh is my shepherd, the observing leader who guides and nurtures, who tends to me from Ra'ah to see. I shall not be diminished. I shall not be decreased or made void. I shall not be found lacking or have any unfulfilled need. I shall never be abated or bereaved. So Yahweh is going to be with him the entire time, and Yahweh is never going to allow anything bad to happen to him.
No, it's totally secure.
Okay.
Totally tranquil and secure with him. Yeah.
Yeah, and at no point can his soul be voided or annulled, diminished to nothingness. He's eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then, in an abode, Na'ah, conducive to growing, to sprouting out and shooting forth, dash A, he enables me to stretch out and recline appropriately, sheltered after exerting myself. So, We just covered Na'ah, but now dash A. Dash A is very often rendered anointed.
Mm-hmm.
It is also rendered fat.
Yes.
It is from dash and dash N. Dash is used interchangeably throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms to convey mishpat, which are the means Yahweh uses to resolve disputes. Speaking of the seven Moed Mikre. Choke, which are Yahweh's inscribed instructions that cut us into the relationship.
Right. Uh-huh. Right.
And Torah, the source from which Yahweh's guidance and teaching flow.
Right.
And in that regard, you can't translate it as fat if it's synonymous with Torah.
Well, you could, how about it in the sense of growing?
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. But the other problem is you can't really just render it anoint because there is a Hebrew word that is clearly means, well, it's properly translated anoint so long as you know what anoint really means. And that is Masiach.
Yeah.
Masiach is the adjective that is used to describe the messenger who is set apart and prepared to serve, that is describing the mission of Yahusha in Daniel, Masiach. And so Masiach is the Hebrew word for anoint. That means to cover in oil, which means the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
To cover in the Spirit so as to prepare an individual to be sent out as a messenger to serve in that role. And so if Yahweh wanted to say anoint, he's going to use Mashiach. He's sure as hell not going to use Deshe. And while Deshe can describe that which is the fatty portions of meat, and it can describe olive oil, it really means to grow, to flourish.
And to enlighten. I got enlightened.
Right, yeah. Right. To thrive, to sprout out, to shoot forth. If you're sprouting out from a source of life, you're expanding your reach, aren't you?
Yes, and I also found the first sprouts of the earth.
Right.
As in the herbs, you know, the growth.
Yes. Matter of fact, Yahweh uses Deshe right there in Bereshit in Genesis in the first chapter, doesn't he? Sprouting forth. To go, you know, like there was the first plant, well, then there was the next plant. It was further down, further away, and then another, and then another. And it's sprouting forth. It's spreading out. Well, that's what we're going to do in eternity. But then what I did is I looked at, well, since the lexicons don't do a very good job of this, what could I learn from all of the related words and then from the letters that comprise the word? And when we return, let's first look at what the related words tell us and then look at what the letters say.
Okay.
Because this is a rather important word. It's used a lot. Deshe. Conducive. This is a home conducive to growing, to sprouting out, to shooting forth. Deshe. This is a home where we flourish and thrive. A home where we sprout new life, where we shoot forth, covered in olive oil. It's a metaphor for the set-apart spirit, the olive oil, because she enlightens us, she heals us, she envelops us, she nourishes us. In preparation for a festival feast, it's from Dasha, which means to bring forth new life, life which grows, which flourishes, which is abundant. And it's directly related to the word dashin, which is the provision of the choicest, most nourishing, richest, and most delightful food to consume, all which facilitates vigorous health, abundant prosperity, tremendous new growth, total freedom, complete satisfaction, and a stalwart attitude, which is often used interchangeably with Torah. Mizpat and choke. That's what the word means when you study it, examine it closely. But it's comprised of Delet Shin Aleph. How would you like to tackle that one, Kirk?
Well, we've got, that's pretty straightforward. You've got a Delet, which is a D, it is a doorway.
Mm-hmm.
We always think in terms of the Passover doorway that's leading us to the...
doorway to God's home, doorway to the truth, doorway to Yahweh, doorway to the covenant.
And right. upright pillars again, being supported, supporting the beam. So all the wonderful things are in and delete, and then you have the shin after that,
shin.
Which is the teeth. We always think in terms, in this context, we'd be thinking of nourishing. Obviously,
and
we're
words.
Talking about sprouts and so forth, so we're nourishing words, those things that really feed us. He said, you don't live by bread alone, you know, but every word out of Yah's mouth, out of his Torah. So
this doorway, comprised of nourishing words, leads to the LF.
LF, which is, once again, the ram's head, the strength, the power, the authority, the almighty, the one who is the head. The one who is our leader and father.
Almighty God, our father and shepherd.
Right, and shepherd.
Ab El.
El.
So this is the doorway comprised of nourishing words which lead to the eternal and almighty shepherd.
Well, that's yes. And when you think going through Passover, you know, you're going through Matzah and being adopted and being empowered and enriched.
So I'm gonna go with that's a more appropriate definition of Deshe than anointed.
Takes it a little further here.
Yeah. Now, I want to just take a quick detour here. I mentioned on the Friday Shabbat program that there are printed versions now of Yada Yah, Questioning Paul, and Introduction to God that are available at a site called ClaireTors.com. It's C-L-A-I-T-O-R-S.com. C-L-A-I-T-O-R-S.com. And there, if you search by title, you can search for Yada Yah, Questioning Paul, or Introduction to God. I have all three here. It's four. There's two volumes of Yada Yah, so it's four bound books. They are beautifully bound. We're not selling something here because the currently doesn't have any cover art, although they have names in the front, Yada Yah, Introduction to God, and Questioning Paul. But the cover art is being conceived by Kirk, and he's going to earn the same royalty on the sale of these books that I am earning, having written them, which is the satisfaction of knowing that we've learned something and that we've shared it.
Right.
But I would encourage those. I think there were something in the range of 40 or 50 books that were just sold over the weekend by Claritors, C-L-A-I-T-O-R-S.com, of these various volumes.
Good.
So it gives you a chance to read it. And what Kirk is thinking about doing is creating some cover art for them that is based on Yahweh's name. And Kirk, you are a portrait and landscape artist.
Mm-hmm.
And these are letters.
Right.
There's letters that convey images. And so Scott and I were talking during the break, not that that we are artists, because we're not. We can draw stick
figures.
Everybody's
an art director. So that's
okay. Oh, right. Okay.
And there goes my rap career.
No, we're an art director right now. He's just promoted us to art director.
Art director.
One of the things we thought is that if the front of you, if you just have an elegant rendering of these letters as they comprise Yahweh's name,
mm-hmm.
Why not on the back show the letter with what they represent behind them of Abraham and Sarah, of the peg securing and enlarging the tent, of the hand reaching out to us